Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast.
Greetings, Slackers. I hope your apples are coated in toffee and your trick-or-treat bags are full of mini Mars bars. Happy Halloween to everybody who's listening to this podcast. Happy Halloween to the subscribers and happy Halloween to the non-subscribers as well. My name is Phil Taggart and this is my Slacker Podcast, a show where rad musicians come to share their first demos and then they are forced to have to sit with me for over an hour. It's written into the scripture that they have to sit. The demo's finished. It's all good. They're like, okay, right, well, that's why I'm coming on to the show. I'm going to play the demo and then I'm going to leave. Might pick myself up a coffee on the way. No, you can't. It's written into the contract. You have to sit here. I'm also really super self-conscious with this week's introduction because yesterday I made my debut for the mighty Western Wanderers FC. They play in a Sunday league in Brighton. I think they're in the fourth tier of the Brighton Sunday League. And if you live outside of the UK, or even if you don't have that much football knowledge, you probably don't know what Sunday League is or the reputation that it has. It is very well known for being incredibly brutal. Slide tackles flying in everywhere, fist fights, spitting. I mean, the whole lot. Lots of shouting. Lots and lots of shouting. I found out that the hard way. I went one-on-one with their striker when I was in goal and we clashed into each other. And now I've got a fucking spectacular black eye and what I think might be a broken nose as well. Kind of looks like a wobbly cheese string at the minute. And that's what I'm thinking, do I sound super nasal on this introduction than when I did this with Kate Nash? But yeah, that's why I'm being a little bit weird. Am I sounding really nasal? Let me know, because then I'll be like, okay, right, maybe I should go to the doctors and get this checked out. I've put a gnarly picture of it actually up on Instagram and Twitter. If you go to @PhillyTaggart and you want to not be able to eat your dinner this evening, go look at that dirty broken nose that I've got. Anyway, back to the podcast. This week, we welcome Kate Nash to be our slacker. She is an absolutely amazing woman in many, many different ways. In music, she's incredible. In acting, in activism. She is just, yeah, like a really talented individual and just a general force of good as well. It's very rare that you find somebody who's so good at all those things but is incredibly easy company as well. Normally, you find with people who are like good at loads of different things that they can't sort of keep their head in the game for a conversation. They're too busy thinking about what they're going to do next, how we're going to achieve. Kate Nash, just, you could sit and chat to her for hours and hours and hours. But that's not what we do, because this isn't the Joe Rogan podcast. We don't have an extra 2 hours to sit talking about chemtrails on the podcast or conspiracy theories or whatever. I mean, as fun as that would be. But listen, we've got an hour with her. Actually, it's a little bit longer this week. Here's a little tapas board of what we spoke about.
Anyone in any area of the music industry is probably having a hard time making it work. And I think that anyone who says they aren't is a liar. I am really lucky that my first record was a number one record, because like you said, it did give me a fan base that I've been able to utilise, but became even closer to that fan base by doing independent work and by having a really close relationship with them, because I need them and I know them. I know my fans like really well. Hate's a strong word. I was bullied at school,
right,
and I wrote this song as a retaliation to that, to kind of reclaim some power.
Before we jump in, if you're listening to the podcast and you're enjoying them for what they are, go on, do me a wee favour, will you? Jump on the platform where you're listening to this podcast right now and give it a little rate and a review. I'm very interested to hear what you guys think of the podcast as well. If you think it's really shit, maybe just tweet or Instagram me it, because, yeah, if you're going to write it as a review, it's just going to look really shit, isn't it? And the more reviews, the more rates and all we get. If you listen to podcasts, you hear people talking about this all the time. It gets really boring. You're probably numb to it at the minute. But it does genuinely mean a lot to me, because I'm not like making any money doing this. I just want to sit down with some artists and chat to them. And I want more people to listen to it so we can start doing them live. And yeah, I want the Slacker podcast to grow into so much more than where it's at now. This is like it in its infancy, but I feel like, you know, with the right amount of support, and obviously there is loads of people listening at the minute, and thank you very much, but the more we get on it, the more that Slacker can get out there and we can interview all the dictators of the world. Imagine that. Imagine sitting down with Donald Trump, Kim Jong-un, all the lads just hanging out, playing their first ever demos. What else could you ask for? Anyway, right, I'm digressing a wee bit. Obviously, Kate Nash fans are probably going, here, P-Tag, go and shut up. And I will. In 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, people in the cheap seats, in the front row, I give you the Slacker Podcast with Kate Nash. Hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm all good. I've just got back from holidays, and I realized that I put on about a metric ton. You know when you go on holidays and you just eat,
yeah,
and you just drink.
You just sit there and eat and drink. Yeah, every exactly. Day and you're like, oh,
bring me more
life.
Food.
Yeah,
this is my seventh
more
course of the
bread.
Day. So I got back last week and I decided.
And you drink cocktails on holiday usually. It's like cocktails.
I don't think I drank one cocktail. I drank lots of wine. I think I can consider myself a wino now.
Okay, nice.
But you know when you get back and you're like, right, I need to like sort my life out.
Yeah.
So I went for a run and played football yesterday. So if I'm like really stiff and like look like a Lego man today.
Perfect.
That's probably why.
Respect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's going on with you? You're kind of splitting yourself between the US and the UK at the minute.
I'm living a double life. I'm like a spy.
Do you change your name when you go to the US?
Yeah. I was here for Independent Festival in Ireland and Reading in Leeds. And then
I was at that festival. I
what,
played
Independent
it that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, were
the,
you?
The one in Cork.
Yeah. What I played it.
What day did you play?
I don't know. I can't remember now.
I know that I played on a Sunday.
I was thinking maybe, was it Sunday? No, he's like, no.
I know I played on a Sunday because I finished my DJ set at 2:30 in the morning and had a 7 o'clock flight to get back to Radio
God.
1 to do two shows that day.
Damn.
I was like, oh my God. So you did the Independence
Festival?
Yeah,
I had Irish dancers with me.
Shut up, really?
Yeah, I had a little troupe of Irish dancers. They were so cute.
What, as in like they were dancing on stage?
Yeah, they danced to a song called Agenda that I have and then Foundations, and it was really cool.
My mum and dad and my granny sent me to Irish dancing.
I went Irish dancing.
Yeah?
My mum's Irish.
Yeah.
So I, like, the first music I heard was Irish music. First music I played, Tim Whistle the Baron, and I have, like, trophies for, like, the trophy reel and stuff like that. I used to win
Are
the reel.
Are you joking?
A fesh, yeah.
So do you still whip it out at weddings?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
is your family like a set dancing family where like four of yous all dance together?
No. I just sort of have really delved back into that recently because it's, you know, when you're like making music and making records and stuff and you have like, I've been doing it for this long now, like it's interesting to go back to like, I just found it interesting to go back to like the origins of my relationship with music and my history and culture and everything. So, and it's such a like musical like thing, Ireland, you know, it's so musical.
It's a land of I mean everybody's got an acoustic guitar.
Yeah, and you just go in a pub and it's like there's an 8-year-old who's like slaying an accordion and he's like just yawning and like falling asleep and he's like the best accordion player in the land, but he has no idea and he's 8 and he doesn't even care.
When we were like 18, 19 and we were like absolutely skint, we bought Byrons as an investment.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're listening and you don't know what a Byron is, it's like a little drum that you have on your lap and you've got a little stick that you kind of like flick your wrist. It's like the slap bass of Irish music.
Yeah.
And we used to bring it to the traditional sessions because you knew you got free pints.
Trad sessions.
Yeah.
Trad heads.
You go to the trad session, there'd be like 12 people all playing different instruments.
Yeah.
And it'd be just really, really fast. We'd turn up with the Byron because you get free beers and we had no
nice.
Money. So it was like
it's
that.
A good idea.
Cheap bar on for £30. Great investment.
Way more beers than £30 in there.
Is that something, do you think you'll go down further in your career? Like maybe like a release an album with a lot of Irish music?
Yeah, that's what I want to do. Yeah, that's like my plan. But it's sort of just I've just released a record. It's like getting.
I mean, like you've just stuck a record out this year. So like maybe like.
But I have been looking into it for like quite a while and It's like a definitely a passion project that I want to.
Is there any contemporary Irish musicians like or like old school trad ones? Like who do you like? Is it like Clannad and Planxty and stuff like that?
Yeah, Planxty. I really love Christy Moore. I mean, I love the Pogues as well.
The Pogues are one of my favourite bands.
Yeah, they're amazing.
All time.
I played St. Patrick's Day with Billy Bragg and the Pogues, and I played Tim Whistle on St. Patrick's Day in New York once, which was so cool.
I mean, that's just like ticking off every single box.
Yeah, I know.
Shane McGowan has got a band that he used to tour with called The Popes.
Okay.
And they were, quote unquote, his drinking band, which I don't know what that makes the Pogues.
Wow.
But he played in this like little venue in the north of Ireland, and it was a very small venue. It was like spit and sawdust. The band supporting was called the Rednecks, and
wow,
and there was like fights on the stage right beforehand. It was so chaotic.
Oh my god, I bet.
But he turned up and he was sitting on the seat, and God bless him, he'd obviously had a drink or two before he'd gone on
for his drinking
band. We thought we'd like liven him up. So my two friends lifted me over the barrier and we stole his bottle of wine.
Oh no.
And he completely woke up. He got the mic stand.
Is it like Father Jack? He was just like,
do you know what it exactly was? Where is it? He got another bottle of wine and he was absolutely perfect.
Oh,
I want to play the demo, as we do as we do every single podcast at the very beginning. We play a demo, and yeah, I'll let you like tell me a little bit about it before we hit it.
Well, my manager had it. I didn't have it.
When was the last time you heard it?
I haven't heard it for a really long time, so I don't know what exact which demo is going to be. Is it just me and piano? Yeah.
We're going to hear it now.
Well, let's hear it. Maybe I'll talk about it after because I don't know.
let's whack it on.
Gosh. Why being a dickhead for? Oh, it's not piano. Why being a dickhead? Why being a dickhead for? Oh, this is like one I did in a studio. Fucking up situations. I don't even know what this is. I sound young though.
Well, what age?
Like 18, 19, or just 20, 18. I sound like I've got a little baby voice.
I love how it like rolls into that sort of funk bass line.
Yeah. Why being a dickhead for? Stop being a dickhead. I'm just like trying to figure out what recording session this was. Fucking up situations. Why being a dickhead for? Stop being a dickhead. Why being a dickhead for? We're just fucking up situations. Shiny floor, slippery feet.
Whoever you're recording with loves the bass line.
I think the bass line is Jay, who did my first shows with me.
Yeah.
And I think this was like when we went to like one of our first proper recording sessions where I was like doing like demos in studios, because all my demos before were just like in my bedroom and at home. And so I did a period of time where I was like going to studios to do demos still.
Was that like record labels going, I think we want to send you into the demo, or were you just going to do it yourself?
I was just my manager at the time, I think. I was just like going around a couple of different producers. I think this is when it was like, there's like a studio.
Listen to that organ come in there.
I know.
This is so epic. Like, this does not sound like anything that you put out on the first album, does it?
No.
Like, I don't even know, like.
I'm trying to think what it sounds like.
It sounds like a 70s rock band now, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's like got this like quite twee lyric at the beginning, and then like drifts into like
jam sesh.
I don't even know who.
I know, I'm trying to think too. I'm like, whoa.
Credence.
I think there's like a studio at the bottom of like the Thames or something that's like really, really far.
Yeah.
And there's like a house on the water, and we like stayed there, and it was like sort of countrysidey feeling, like really far down the Thames.
How would you listen to the demos after? Because like when I used to record demos with my band, we used to go driving. We used to stick it on the car.
I love listening to demos in the car.
If it works in the car, it's going to work.
Yeah, and also, that was cool. Well done, me.
Well done,
me and Jay.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
You'd have a big career in classic rock.
Yeah. Who knew? I don't even know. That's so mad. I haven't heard that for years. Like, I don't know how long. Years. 10 years?
Yeah.
9 years, 10 years, probably.
No, you go home every other week, sit and listen to your demos underneath the duvet sheet.
I'm gonna have to get Jerry to send me all my original demos because it's like it's quite fun to listen to hear it really, because it's also like that was like my first ever time in studios, so I just was really experimenting with, you know, you're just really playing because you don't really know what you know.
It's weird, like trying to like. Especially when you're doing it yourself.
Yeah.
You're going in and I don't know about you, but like when there's somebody else who owns the studio or whatever, when you're at the start, you're like, you are God and I will do exactly what you tell me.
Well, you're kind of
nervous.
You
don't have any confidence.
I think you're nervous because a lot of the stuff is like, I don't know what this does and I don't want to break something and someone's in charge of running that. So it feels like they're sort of in charge. But it really depends who you work with as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And I like people that just want to play, and then I've learned a lot from being in and out of studios. Obviously, you just learn stuff, and studying things and learning things actually, like on purpose as well. But I like actually Jay, who played with me on that demo. He has a studio now and he produces bands and stuff. He's like the best person to record with. Mm-hmm. I just did a song with him actually a few weeks ago and we hadn't recorded together for ages and it was so fun because he is like...
Did he put his bass line down on it?
I can show you a picture from
it. Okay.
No, I play bass now, so I put my bass line down on it.
I'm a bass player too. What do you swing?
I do like a Fender Jazzmeister, but I just like love... I started with a P bass.
Yeah.
And that's like a really nice start if anybody wants to start bass, I would say.
I had a little 3/4 black bass. So I don't even know what it was, but it was like £90 in my like local shop.
Oh, perfect. That's what you want. That was my first guitar. It was £70 and it was white. And that's all I know about it.
The good thing is if you start playing an instrument really early, you can flog it off to somebody who's younger than you and you'll be like going, oh, I want to get a new one.
Yeah.
And like, they'll be like... Actually, the guy I sold my bass to, a guy called Danny, is now like a real professional bass player.
Is he?
Who's a session musician with loads of people.
Does he still have it?
I doubt he plays that anymore.
I lost my... I'm just trying to find this photo of you. Oh, look, this was me and Jay. That's like classic photo of me and Jay in the studio.
Wow. I'll tell you what I'm looking at. Kate has got her head inside what looks like a massive like ear trumpet.
It's a gramophone. Like, basically... Jay is like so chilled and up for anything, and he'll just be like, let's try it like this, or you'll have an idea and you're like, do you think we should do it like this? And he's like, yeah, let's do it, like just says yes and tries things and is never judgmental. Nothing's ever too sort of silly or weird or dumb. Things that sometimes I hate when you go in a studio, you feel like I can't ask for this because I feel like they're going to judge it, whereas if someone's just like up for whatever and just like try it, if it works great, if it doesn't, who cares?
What's your biggest like Pink Floyd moment, like you're experimenting? You never like... Like, I remember hearing about Sigur... I don't know whether I made this up or this is true, but Sigur Rós mic'd up a cow's udder.
Oh. Well, I was going to say it was Animal, but it was like in a mansion in this old nunnery where I recorded Girl Talk, and we mic'd up... There was like certain points within this like ballroom that we mic'd up, and there was like a stuffed cheetah that we like mic'd up, and we mic'd the wolf and sort of recorded drums in there.
Did you put them on the credits of the album?
No. But there was also these guard dogs in the mansion that were kind of... one was a bit scary, but they were actually sweet with like the people that lived there, but they were like fit like German Shepherd, like full on, you know, there to protect this mansion. So you had to be like introduced to them so that they knew you.
Oh my
and
God,
stuff.
That's absolutely terrifying. Yeah. It's like Mr. Burns. It's like, you know,
yeah,
like,
exactly, it was.
Send out the hounds.
Yeah, yeah. And they sat outside. I had this really... I have this song called Labyrinth on Girl Talk that's quite sad. And at the end of it, they're sitting outside the doors of the ballroom and they're howling. They're like crying.
No.
And they're like... like that. And you can hear it. And then I'm going like... Oh my...
This is going to be the best song I've ever written. I've made dogs cry.
I make dogs cry to my heart.
Either that or you've hit such a high note where you've lost human frequency and you're just like on the dog whistle noise.
Yeah.
I've got one last question about that demo before I move on. Whoever that song is about, like, you really hate them. Like,
what?
Because like you say dickhead about 456 times.
I mean, that's like daily anyway for me. No.
Yeah.
Hate's a strong word. I was bullied at school.
Right.
And I wrote this song as a retaliation to that, to kind of reclaim some power.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like wanting to just put it in my own words because I was writing songs that I was trying to be this like poet, basically, and it just wasn't working. And I think the bullying came to head when I got locked in a cupboard. And I was like trapped in this cupboard thinking,
that's terrifying.
This is terrible. Like I'm just, and they're all like laughing outside. And also I was like, this is dumb. I don't want to, you know, this is so weird and stupid. And why am I in this cupboard? I'm just going to sit here until I get let out. I wasn't in there crying or I just thought this is so.
This is dumb.
Yeah, this yeah, is so well, stupid.
You weren't like traumatized by it.
Yeah,
like,
I was just kind of like, can you just be a decent person and not lock someone in a cupboard? It's just weird that you want to do that. But obviously it affected me. Lots of the like behaviors. It was more like the sort of like nervousness that you had of like being in the room with that bully.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you go in and you're like, you're just so
every time
on edge.
You think something's going to happen.
You go through the canteen, you go into the classroom and you're just kind of really scared.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a retaliation to that. So it was like wanting to feel, I guess, sort of less like, it's that kind of thing of just like, this is fucking dumb. Like, why are you being dickhead? Like, just stop it. Just fucking stop, because it's just completely pointless.
I had quite a bad run in secondary school with like bullying and stuff like that. And I find that like those people that like were really mean to me or beat me up, like, you know,
yeah.
look at my nose, it's slightly ajar.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, I got broke a couple of times.
Shit.
But those people have come up to me in like the last like 2 or 3 years, like, yeah. like literally the last 2 or 3 years to apologize
really?
to apologize for something that happened a long time ago.
How do you feel when that happens?
Like, you just accept it. Like,
you just go, it's okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. When you're a teenager, you're a ball bag. It's worse if you carry it on into...
Oh, yeah.
Into your 20s.
Like, adult bully. Yeah.
Like, who the fuck are you to be...
Yeah, that's really weird.
Like, looking down on anybody else. But those people have just empty lives, you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. And also, I feel like, you know, being a bully, you get something... Being bullied is really horrible. And some people are in very extreme situations, but there's a way out of school, like it's being an adult, and then you get to choose your friends, and
yeah.
you know, you can still be bullied in the workplace, and there's still things, but your actual social life, you can choose. And when you realise that too, you end up getting rid of toxic relationships, because you can be in really bad friendships that are like toxic and relationships. But, and so you do have a choice, which is great to know. But then that bully is also like living with that forever. See,
forever.
The fact that they come up and apologize to you now, yeah, it's like they're living with that guilt of like knowing
they
did something
that
really,
they were a jerk. Like, yeah. Well, at least they realized it.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. I felt quite like I was a moody, miserable teenager.
Yeah.
Like sort of like either up or down. There was no sort
really?
Of middle ground with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean that's hormones, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Oh Jesus. I think I'm still going through puberty at this age. But like once I like got out of uni and like started hanging about with people who like music and
yeah.
like people when you read
common ground.
Yeah, when you get interest. That common ground, oh my god, like it felt like an epiphany.
Oh, it's connection, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah.
So like, did that happen to you when you were at Brit School, or was that before Brit School?
It happened at Brit School. Yeah.
Like, cause you,
but I also loved the Brit School and I had amazing friends there. And I've never said that actually, because I don't want that to be sort of like, oh, it's terrible there. But I mean, bullying, I think, just happens everywhere.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
can't really, like,
especially
also
when you're
teenagers,
a teenager, yeah.
you know, it's like feeling each other out and roughing each other up in a weird way. And I had an incredible time, and actually the work I was doing at the Brit School really empowered me and just gave me so much confidence. And I managed to get through that and go, and at that time, I remember being like, I'm going to be the best actress in the year. Like, I'm going to do yeah. the best thing. And it fueled my work and it fueled my creativity. And I was able to use that to just like do my theatre as emotionally like full and truthfully as I could.
I mean,
you know?
It'll definitely help drive what you do like as yeah. an actress. But when you put so many people who are like trying to like, you know, succeed as much as possible in a creative atmosphere,
yeah,
there's a level of bitchiness in everybody, but like yeah. surely that must be elongated there, because you're just like going, oh, that person's not really shit.
Well,
like that happens in every school, but
it's
like,
a weird the Brit School's actually got a lot of camaraderie and friendship, because it's I think because and the key element is that it was free to go there,
yeah,
and a lot of performing arts schools are not free. And I've heard horror stories from a lot of places.
Do you have to do like an audition to get into it?
Yeah, you do. Do an audition, and it's
what
like,
was your audition? Do you remember?
I can't remember what monologue I did, because I did theatre there.
Yeah.
So I wasn't doing music. I don't know what my audition was. I did a speech though, like a monologue.
What's the one from Pulp Fiction? If any of you motherfuckers move, I'd love
should've
to see
done that one.
Yeah.
I can do it for you after this. I absolutely loved my experience there. I would go early. I would be there early and I would stay till really late at night. And it was finding people within that had common ground. And most people there actually were like, there was much less bullying than in other schools because we were there for our passion. And so in that scenario, you tend to get people that really want to be there. More people that really want to be there. Obviously, a lot of teenagers are going through hell themselves.
Teenagers, so, like, you could stick a teenager in the most carbon neutral like environment where like everything's emotional, just flatline.
Yeah, it's hard.
And you would just be like, "Oh, I'm spiking all over the place."
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, it's mental. You just like suddenly get an injection of all these like insane hormones, and you have no idea what to do with that. And your body's changing, and you like hate everyone, and you just want to be loved. That's really weird.
I'm so glad that I'm not a teenager anymore. It's like now
I'm
you've
grateful
got,
for the experience. I'm grateful. But I'm okay.
I've done my time, and now you've got like social media and everything on top of that.
It's hard,
dude. Like, yeah, it just brings the bullying to another level. But I don't.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
it's so hardcore. I wanted to talk about you breaking your foot.
Okay.
Because I broke my foot, and that's how I learned how to play bass. Really. Yeah. I held the bass beforehand and was really shit at it.
Yeah.
But like you broke your foot and then that was kind of like when you really got into music.
It was. That's when I got my guitar, my 70 quid white guitar. It was white because Jimi Hendrix played a white guitar, so I wanted a white one. But my mum and dad
did you play it with your teeth and left-handed and on fire?
Yeah. My mum and dad bought me that because I was a bit depressed because I was working in like Nando's, I think.
Do you have a black card now?
I don't. No. I'm vegan now, so I don't really want chicken. So you're just being chicken.
Yeah, exactly.
I protest.
Yeah, exactly.
Now.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't work there.
I'm on the black list. I basically had a weird, like, after I finished Brit and I really wanted to go to drama school and I got rejected. And I even got rejected from all my safety universities. I was like, what? Like, I don't really want to go there.
Did you have to go to clearing?
I don't know. I got a distinction in my national diploma. I got nothing. I got no options.
Nobody wanted a piece of the Nash.
Yeah.
Like, nah.
It was the universe. It was the universe. Like, that's not the path. So I didn't realize that at the time, but I had heart surgery. And
what age?
17.
God, that's a lot. That's a hectic age. I mean, it's not, there's never a good time for heart surgery, really.
Schedule it in at 35.
Okay, yeah, perfect. Yeah. But yeah, like 17 is a particularly bad time to have it.
It's quite weird because you don't know what to do. There's all this pressure on 17, 18 of going like, what are you going to do for like university in the next 2 years of your life?
If you fail your GCSEs or A-levels, you will literally have nothing. Yeah.
And you don't know how to make plans. I don't know what I was doing day to day, let alone the next 3 years felt like the biggest commitment in the world. So to make a decision, I had all these, my mum was always really annoyed at this doctor because he gave me all these statistics of like whether I should, what would happen, the statistics of chances of me dying if I had the surgery, having
a
heart attack, having a stroke, having this, and what would happen if I didn't and all this stuff. And I was 17 and I was like, I don't know how to fucking decide this. How am I supposed to decide if I'm like going to do something that might kill me? I don't know.
You should be sneaking into clubs and smoking cigarettes. Do you know what I mean?
So anyway, I didn't really know what to do. Not luckily, but by chance, it got so bad that I needed to just have it. So I was kind of like, cool, don't need to make a decision. Have to have this surgery. And I remember on like the day before, it got to like 3 or 4 p.m. and I was in my pajamas and I was like, just no bra, like eating Ben and Jerry's. And I was like, shit, this is not like the movies. You know, in the movies when there's like a teenager who's like, last day on earth is like them being in love and like doing crazy things and riding on a bike with their arms out. And like, you know, I was like, I really hope this wasn't my last day because I'm just sitting here in my kitchen and I'm doing nothing. So, cool.
Yeah, you're like, okay, right.
I was like, well, I think I have more
does
to
that
live.
Mean that when you came out of that, like you were like, right, fuck it, I'm going to do everything?
I didn't realise at the time, but now I'm 31, I look back and I'm like, that's obviously where all my attitude came from of going, I mean, I was quite a like, I had a lot of enthusiasm anyway and drive, but...
Yeah, well, you don't get the Brit school like and all of that by sitting in your house doing nothing.
Yeah, so definitely after that, I was like determined and then rejection came and that sucks.
Which is really important as well.
Mm-hmm. And I then worked at Nando's and then I got my final rejection. I think I went to see Brit. what was it, Brokeback Mountain with the Cowboys?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Cowboys, yeah.
And then I got my last rejection letter of the place I really wanted to go to, which was my final choice, my final opportunity. And I fell down the stairs that night and broke my foot. And
you literally have no luck around this town, don't do you?
It was a bad day.
Yeah.
And I dragged my foot out as well. I went out. I was like, I'm going out. And I went out and like got to Swiss Cottage, I think. And I was like dragging, literally dragging my foot, like in a horror movie.
It's going to be the best night I've ever had.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see my favourite band.
And I think I went to Frog, you know.
Like, I've heard those night slaggers
before. I think I went to Frog and someone stamped on my foot and I was done. So, the next morning woke up, blue foot. I thought, okay, got to do something about this. Went to hospital, got it in a cast. And then I was just depressed then. I was like, okay, I work at Nando's. I don't know, nothing's happening. This is really bad. And it was one of those things where your mum goes, you've got to work hard at school. Otherwise, you're going to end up like working in a fast food restaurant. And I was like, that's what's happened to me. And I did work. This is not the deal.
Yeah.
I worked hard and I'm in a fast food restaurant.
And
the
thing is, like, some people love their job in yeah. like fast food restaurants, but it depends if like if that's what you like doing, then that's fine.
Yeah, totally.
That's totally fine. But if you're doing that and you want to do something else, yeah. you should do something else.
Yeah. It wasn't like my goal, and but it became the drive again. I really look back on that with fondness because working in mundanity is what gave me my style of songwriting and just my drive to go further. And so I had this broken foot and I made a deal with myself. I was like, I'm going to book my first show. As soon as my foot's better, that's what I'm doing. And during this time, I'm going to record all these demos and I'm going to start a MySpace page.
Let's start a MySpace page.
Yeah, and I like started it in secret.
What was it? MySpace.com/ Kate Nash?
Kate Nash Music.
Kate Nash Music. What was Kate Nash taken?
I don't know. I think I was just really like, I'm a musician, so I have to like...
How popular was MySpace at that time? Because I remember my band, like, I'm actually like...
Massive.
If I'm logged on, I want to see if my band's profile is still there.
Well, MySpace is all different now, so it doesn't look as cool anymore.
No, like MySpace was really instrumental around that period for breaking musicians. Like
MySpace is the golden era of people having power and people having power without corporate companies being involved. And I had this realization recently, and it was sad to think that that doesn't exist anymore. But if you think about every streaming service or whatever, it's all like there's no pureness. Yeah. Like MySpace, people became famous because kids were listening to their songs and that's it.
That's kind of like rap music and SoundCloud. But even SoundCloud, like I don't really know what's happening with it. But like, yeah. the MySpace thing. And like, I was talking to the Cribs a while back about the power of the message board in like 2000s.
Oh, like on the forum.
Yeah, so like even Arctic Monkeys and stuff, like they built their career through people talking and going like, oh, I live in such and such, do you want to come down and stay here? And MySpace is kind of the same.
Yeah, you had your top eight and then...
Your top eight people. I don't think I was ever in anybody's top eight.
But the great thing about that is it was such a cool way to find music because you'd find... There'd be like cool people's just profiles and you'd go on them and they'd be like have a little player and they were playing a song. And you'd be like, cool, I like this song. Click on that. It goes to the band's profile. Then you check out all their music. Then there's top eight, all their friends or people they like. You find eight new bands and every one of those bands has eight recommended bands. And you just found so much cool independent music. And it was this golden era. And then I feel like, of course it died because people wanted to start getting money and advertising and the industry wanted to control that. And it was,
These things only have a finite time where they're actually,
it's sad because
actually useful. Something else will come along and take its place. It always does because artists thrive and find a new places to get their music out where it's not controlled by
I feel like we're in industry. A weird place right now where it's Instagram is the main thing. And unfortunately
it's not very good for music, is it?
It's just all image based and it helps artists, but
it's good if you're like,
it's not good for your self-esteem.
It's good if you've got like rock hard abs or like, I don't know, like I just think that I look at it, I take Instagram with a pinch of salt. Like when I don't know myself, like I'm a real moody bastard, so like if I don't want to put up a post, I'm not going to put one up. But with my job being in the media, like you have to put up Instagram posts or you have to put up Twitter, and I find it sometimes to be actually mentally exhausting.
Yeah, that's why
I don't want to share my life with, I don't want to share every aspect of my life with everybody. I want to like be able to sit in my pants and eat Ben and Jerry's and not have to like go sitting in tonight, living my best life. No, I'm not. I'm sitting watching a rerun of fucking Emmerdale.
But weirdly, that is what people want to see.
Yeah, yeah.
They want you in your pants watching Emmerdale, and they want to just watch you doing nothing. So you'd thrive. Mm. No, I can't imagine how hard it is. Like, well, I can because I'm sort of part of it as well. You have to keep adapting and going with what's relevant. And I find that there's a lot of pressure to put out imagery that's mainly of yourself. And you know, I had, what, 6 photos up on my MySpace or something and refreshed them maybe when I did a gig and someone took a photo and I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll take that.
I didn't have to think. Now it's like you have to have a professional photographer follow you everywhere you go. Yeah, and like exactly. Make it yourself look as cool
as possible.
Your life
is not life anymore. It's just content.
I know.
Do you know?
And it's like the balance, like you said, of going, there's my actual personal addiction to social media because they are designed by people that make the slot machines in Vegas. So what? You are addicted for a reason because it's being built to make you as addicted as possible. Like anyone like saying they're not, it's you probably are because they do design them to be that way. And a lot of the people that make the apps don't have them and ban their children from having them.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And there's a lot on YouTube of TED Talks and just like that, how it affects our concentration and all these like things. And depression is higher because it's like social anxieties and you're comparing yourself and all that.
To other people, I get that a lot. Like sometimes with like my career and stuff, I'll be like looking at other people going, like they'll put up like 100 stories and be doing this, that and the other. And I'm busy all the time, doing work all the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm going, oh, I'm not doing enough, but I'm actually thread thin.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I've been working for about 14 hours today.
Yeah.
But I should put up 12 posts. And I'm like, no, fuck that.
We're not immune. We're not immune to the effects of how it makes us feel.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that it's important to sort of go like, well, I think I'm trying to learn at the moment what is defining that thing of going like, I have to for my job. How much of that? And it's really difficult because people want the personal. They don't want just like professional. Like they don't just want that. They want kind of every aspect. They want you in your pants and they want you looking good and they want you in the action and you want to put out an image of like killing it or whatever. And
smashed it.
Yeah. And what? How much of that is, because I think that too. I'm like, I have to do this because my career exists because of MySpace. My last album is only here because of Kickstarter. Like I need social media. If I don't have that, then what do I have? But also, I'm using it way more probably than I need to. I don't know. It's like, how do we define what's necessary?
Show me someone who's got a social media balance and life balance and I'll show you a liar. Nope. Like, do you know what? Like,
right.
Yeah. No, no,
it's habits,
you're either not
isn't
doing it?
It
enough or you're doing it too much.
Yeah.
I mean, this feels like a perfectly cynical time to break up the conversation, right? It is a halfway point. It is time for you to take an E, suck an orange, get the mind ready for the second half. So as you're sort of getting yourself ready, I'll throw my PR mantra at you. How about that? This Sunday, November 4th, 2018, if you're listening to this in a couple of weeks' time, you'll be like, oh, shut up, fast forward. I have got Tom York from Radiohead, who's playing 2 tracks, Stripped Back to the Piano, on my Radio 1 show at 7 p.m. Sunday. Next week on November the 8th, 9th and 10th, BBC Introducing Live is happening in London and it's very, very exciting. It is like Disneyland for anyone who is making music or trying to make music their career. You should definitely get tickets to it. I'm going to be there throughout 2 of the 3 days. The Thursday and the Friday, and I'm going to be hosting some panels there. I'm going to be sitting listening to loads of demos and giving feedback to new artists. And very excitingly, I will be doing the first ever live Slacker podcast with you, me at 6. And I've never done a live podcast before, so that will be, I don't know, interesting. Does it work live? Does it not? I don't know. We'll find out. Also, if you have any suggestions for artists that you want to hear on the podcast, then it's really easy. Reach out at Philly Taggart on Instagram and Twitter and post me some stuff. And yeah, try and coax me into it because it takes ages to get them on as well. You'd think it would just be one email. And some of them actually it has been. You just be like, do you want to do one? Yeah. When you're free. Okay. Some of them it's like, okay, right, well, album 2 is coming out now and blah, blah, blah. Actually, Kate Nash was probably the easiest out of all of them. She was amazing. I just emailed her manager, Joey, and Joey was like, let's do this. This sounds great. I'm going to give up on my digression as usual. I'm bumbling away. Bumble, bumble, bumble. Let's get back into the podcast right now with Kate Nash.
You talked about like sort of starting a MySpace and doing the latest album at Kickstarter. You've kind of had like a, you've done so many different ways of releasing music. You've like done the independent label with like, was it Moshi Moshi did the...
My first 7-inch, Caroline's Victim and Birds was Moshi Moshi, yeah.
And then moved into the major record labels after that.
Yep, I went to Fiction, Polydor.
Major record label, independent, and then DIY.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole gambit. I don't think there's any other way of...
I've gone back to my roots. I'm a circle.
You're the circle. You're the music industry circle. Finally, the perfect circle. Which one's the best one? Which one do you prefer? I suppose they all have different aspects, don't they?
I think, it's so hard. It's always hard. I would say that anyone in any area of the music industry is probably having a hard time making it work. And I think that anyone who is, same as what you said, anyone who says they aren't is a liar. What I know about the insides of the industry and the insides of most people's careers is that everyone's sort of having a rough time of
figuring out. You're selling
out
music to people who won't buy music.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So it's like,
there is music, there is money coming in through Spotify. Yeah. And I know, like,
I would say I feel, sorry to interrupt.
Sorry.
I feel the best I've ever felt right now. And I think that I'm excited about the prospect of like having started sort of my own label and figuring out, like we were just talking about this actually, like about what to do next. And it's like, we're going to learn and figure out as we go. And there's a lot of freedom there. And I wouldn't sort of, you compromise a lot of freedom with it's like, how much do you want to give up for what you want to get? And is what you're getting worth what you're giving up?
See, I think that's exactly the same. Cause like I've got a label and I've been running it for 4 years.
Yeah.
And I've done 2 years within a major label and I've done 2 years outside of it, DIY.
Yeah.
And I prefer doing it DIY. We've got no money. It's completely hand to mouth. The last EP feeds the next EP.
Yeah.
And if we screw one up, then we're kind of screwed. I just prefer doing it that way. Yeah. I don't really like having to answer to too many people.
And I appreciate all the experiences that I'm having. And it's becoming independent, like completely refreshed my appreciation for my work and my job and the things I get to do. And so I think I'm like...
But you built most of everything on the major label system. So that once you like use that and you're like going, all right, I've got my fan base now, see you later.
Well, actually, I mean... MySpace sort of is where everything built up for me. I was like not being played by Radio 1 and then Foundations.
I wasn't there at that time.
Wasn't your fault.
You can't blame me.
But like then it was like number 2 in the charts and then they played it and stuff like that. And I think, you know, I was getting buzz because of all my shows in London were like completely packed. And there was like a really cool scene of indie musicians like...
I love
doing
that
really
era.
Well.
Yeah. That was like my era. I wasn't there. I was in Northern Ireland living vicariously to a week old version of NME.
Yeah.
And you had like Jack Pignatti and
Jamie T,
and, Laura Marling.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, like London looks incredible.
It was fun. It was like,
I'm going to buy myself some winkle pickers and move there. A button up shirt. Yeah. A checked button up shirt.
Yeah, and like
to the
wear
top.
Four belts. And.
I definitely had about a 6 month phase of
amazing.
Like looking like Jack Pignatti.
Cool.
For a while I was like, he looks really cool, so I'm gonna do his like weird dance.
It was great. It was a great period of time, and I think that I am really lucky that my first record was a number one record, because like you said, it did give me a fan base that I've been able to utilize. But I became even closer to that fan base by doing independent work and by having a really close relationship with them, because I need them and I know them. I know my fans like really well.
I just feel that in 2018, like if you release that album, the same album, the same way now, mm-hmm. there's so many different media platforms and stuff.
Yeah.
Like I think breaking new artists now is the most impossible thing
it's
to do.
It's a nightmare.
And it takes years. I feel bad for...
And the thing is, they don't put in the time. There's no longevity. It's like they try and break an artist and they'll try and break 25 at the same time. And then if they don't work, the others get ditched. Yeah, and it's so unfair. It's so messed up.
It takes years now, yeah. whereas back in 2007, I might be wrong, right? But this is it from when I wasn't working in the music industry or on radio. But for me, what it looked like is you get a couple of fans,
yeah.
you get into the enemy, get a video out, get it on MTV2 on Zane Lowe,
yeah.
right? Get Zane Lowe to play it,
yeah.
then get it up onto Radio 1,
yeah.
and then maybe do later with Jules Holland, and then boom, number one album. Sure, right?
I mean,
is that the template? I don't know.
That's what a lot of people were doing. And obviously the music had to connect with people to work.
I mean, that's the most important thing, really.
But a lot of that was sort of the journey, yeah. And then it started to change. And I don't really know, obviously, because I'm not in a record label. But what it felt like was that the music industry was very resistant to the internet. And it kind of wanted to just pretend that wasn't happening.
It was really slow as well, trying to figure it out.
Yeah, keep going in the old model and not adapt and not be innovative and just sort of ignore the internet and be like, well, someone else is going to deal with
it. Check out the internet. What a pile of balls that will be. I think Prince...
And I'll only be here for 6 months anyway, so the next guy can deal with it, you know?
I can't remember. I might be wrong in this, but I think Prince said that the internet was going to be a fad.
Oh my God.
It's the only thing Prince has ever got wrong. Apart from that, he's just got everything right.
We don't know though. Prince is probably 20 million years old, so it might be a fad, but it's
he's been here.
It's a 100-year fad, it'll go away.
He's omnipotent.
Definitely.
We were talking about that sort of time in music because we're the same age, and I was just I was really mad into your music and into that scene in general of 2007. But there was a thing that me and my friends used to do quite a lot because we're from Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
We used to really enjoy setting up conversations with people. And we used to use two of your words quite a lot.
Did you?
Yeah. So it would be say you were out in the night out and you're in the smoking area or you're chatting to somebody. I'd just be going, oh, mate, you're looking pretty buff. Were you at the gym? And then somebody would be going, yeah, I'm trying to get fitter.
Yeah, of course. I was going to say, it's got to be fitter and bitter, hasn't it?
Those two words must have followed you around.
There was a meme. Oh, I've got to find it. It's on my Twitter. There was a meme that just went around and it was 15-year-old me, and it's this weird jelly monster just being and it was when Kate Nash said, you said I'm... must eat so many lemons because I'm so bitter, and then it was me screaming and the thing's just and it still happens at gigs now. I always leave that line and the crowd just goes screams it.
Have you had a relationship with that where it's you really hated it and now it's fun again, or you don't really give a shit?
Yeah, I think I didn't enjoy after my first record. You're so exhausted. You tour for 18 months to 2 years and you play 12 songs.
Yeah.
Maybe you're really prolific and you have a shit ton, but most people have their first album.
Yeah.
12 to 14, maybe 15 if you're lucky, songs. And you do that every night for 2 years and you want to die. And then...
Please, let me play something new.
Yeah. Then you do your second record and they want you to tour and still play the first album. And you're I can't, I'm going to die. So I need to play new music. So there was a definite period of resistance in my second record, and then it becomes fun again because you have loads of other songs, so you're not trapped.
Yeah.
Anytime you're feeling trapped, it's you are feeling suppressed and you want to rebel against it. Me anyway, I feel like that. So I love it now. I love playing it. It's the pop song that people want to hear, and it's so cool to have that, to know that when I play Foundations, everyone's going to lose their shit.
It's like a
Brett
Glass for an emergency, isn't it? It's going right. You might be playing in front of a crowd, maybe that's not your own or something.
Right, right.
Or at a festival, and you're all right, okay, fuck it, I'm dropping this.
But yeah, I usually build up to it.
Yeah.
Or we did a really cool thing on the Made of Bricks 10-year anniversary.
We're getting the band back together.
It's
just me.
me and myself got back together. And I played the album in order. So Foundations is the second track on the record. So I'd do play as the intro. And then the girls would in my band would be playing that, and we'd have the track on, so it really sounded like the record. And then I'd come out, usually wearing an insane fairy godmother outfit. And then we'd start Foundations with just me and my guitarist. Well, no, I think I started with the piano. Yeah, I would start with the just those chords that you like hear at the beginning. Yeah,
I'm not gonna do it because I'm gonna go ding ding ding.
Yeah, that. And then I do like the first verse on that, and people are just like, "Oh my god, I can't believe she's doing that like right now. This is crazy because it's basically the first song I'm on for." And then I'd come off, and we'd do the first verse fully with just me and my guitarist, and then it would go into the chorus, and I wouldn't sing anymore, and like the crowd would just, oh no, we sang the first chorus together.
Yeah.
And then dropped out. And so, and I'd some, we just went for, I did like a costume change sometimes after that.
Yeah.
And when I was doing that, if I did that, you could hear the crowd just would still play, would still be singing the second verse like mad.
You're like, well, I could just close now.
Yeah. And then we'd go back and then it would be coming at the end of the set and we'd do it fully again, like the whole way through. And it was so fun doing that.
Like, I always love a fan base that like, well, that grows with the artist.
Yeah.
Because like your music style changed, yeah, has changed so much.
Yeah.
From like, even like, you know, at the beginning we were talking about like Irish music and stuff like, yeah, that. Yeah. Which I'm sure probably wouldn't have been entertained at like during the first record, because you'd be like, when you're 18, like Irish music's not cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you grow into your roots. But yeah, like, you know, the Riot Girl and Bikini Kill influences, yeah, and the, I mean, just general sort of garagey punk rock,
yeah,
started slowly drifting in, which I thought was pretty gnarly.
Definitely, yeah.
Who were you sort of listening to, or was it like a thing that happened between records, or was it like you used to listen to that sort of stuff when you were growing up?
Yeah, so I listened to that. So I listened to a lot of punk, like I listened to a lot of British punk when I was like 16.
What,
like,
are we talking like
Buzzcocks, Adverts,
Buzzcocks,
Knife Edge, The Zips, like
Susie and the Banshees. I mean, The Clash, yeah, is still my favorite one.
The like, Clash, yeah. But I was really into sort of like British, just sort of weird, odd seven.
Oi punk?
Yeah, I was
oi.
Yeah, I was into stuff like that.
That wasn't Vampire Weekend, by the
way. And the Adverts and Buzzcocks were like my two favourites. And then I got from there into, you know, the Slits, and then into the Gits. The Slits,
I don't
and the
know
Gits.
I don't know the Gits.
Oh, the Gits are so good. I then got into like Bikini Kill and, you know, a lot of the Riot Girl stuff. And then Hole and Courtney, and you know, sort of just.
I never got into Hole.
Oh my god, Live Through This. Never, that's like the best record ever.
I never got into Hole.
Live Through This, though. Do you not? Have you listened to it? Like,
I was just like, I just don't like her. I don't like her, so I'm not listening to it.
Don't like it or not. But
that's just being like a teenage prick. Do you know what I mean? I don't like her.
Yeah.
So I'm not listening to it.
Yeah. What about Babes in Toyland? Do you like Babes in Toyland?
I never really listened to Babes in Toyland.
Okay. Well, Live Through This is an amazing record. I really recommend it. And that sort of inspired the Riot Girl stuff a bit more. I guess I was like, get angry sometimes.
I mean, yeah. Well, like you get it out now.
Yeah.
Like, does it feel cathartic? Does it feel does it feel better? Like,
yeah.
Letting that loose.
So much better.
Do you come off stage? You're like, right.
Yeah, I get so much. Well, now it's like a really cool position because it's like, I got a lot of the anger out and now I can like mix both. So it's like I can feel a bit like fiery and I can just feel poppy and I can feel like I want to have, there's so many different moods.
I can't wait till you start the Irish music and you can be like, I can feel Irish.
I can feel a bit Irish, want to have a little jig, get the Kayleigh band going.
Yeah. so like the first love, or maybe not the first love, but obviously getting into acting and going to Brit School for acting and then going from music to acting. I'm sure you've been asked about this quite a lot.
Yeah.
It's one of those questions that people love asking. Go, how did you make the jump from acting to music? I'm not going to ask because music is very creative. Acting is very creative in a different way. They live in the same sphere.
Well, it's storytelling.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
There's a Venn diagram and like you can be in the middle of it. You can do both.
Yeah.
But I love wrestling. I absolutely love it. Ah, man.
Are you a wrestling fan?
Big time, yeah.
Oh, sick.
So from like the golden age of wrestling.
Yeah, that's
for
a better
me,
question. How do you get into wrestling?
Yeah, exactly. Because like, if you're listening to this and you don't know, then you should go check it out. It's on Netflix. It's a show called Glow where Kate Nash plays a wrestler called Ronda.
Ronda Richardson, yeah.
And
My wrestling name is Britannica.
Britannica, yeah, it had to be.
The smartest woman in the world.
You just couldn't do the accent properly, so like, okay, right, you're going to be called Britannica. Isn't there like the Encyclopedia of Britannica? Wouldn't that be a great finisher?
You
pick up an encyclopedia.
I do have an encyclopedia.
And smash it over somebody's head.
I do have it that I hit I hit Melrose on the bum with it in one episode. It's sort of my character stick, I have that.
And that's amazing.
My glasses, yeah.
Were you into wrestling beforehand?
No.
Not at all?
No,
I'm I was so into it as a kid. I actually wanted to be a wrestler between the ages of about 11 and 14. And as you can see, I've definitely managed to pull that off.
Yeah. Well, I have friends who are. I have two friends that are massively into it. Sam Duckworth, Get Cape Where Cape Fly. Mm. He's a massive wrestling
fan. I know
Sam.
I've spoken to him about wrestling before, yeah.
Yeah. He had such a go at me when I got the audition. I was like, I've got this really exciting audition. I'm so excited. I was like, Glow. And he's like, what are you doing with Glow? And I was like, well, it's this audition. He's like, wait a minute. He's like, you need to take this seriously. And then he like sent me a PDF, like a file with like 30 pieces of like, I don't know what he sent me, but all this I don't know. He sent me like documents of wrestling history.
Oh my God.
They're so intense, wrestling fans. Right? He's like, you've got to take it seriously.
No,
like,
wrestling.
Of course I am. Like, what do you think I'm doing? Like, I'm not. Anyway, it was like, they're hardcore fans,
right? Oh, the wrestling fans, like,
you are like,
you stick with it the whole way.
Yeah.
Like, you get into it when you're 12 and you get out of it when you die.
I love that. And then my other friend, Alicia Warrington, who plays drums with me as well, sometimes, like, I made friends with her when I moved to LA, and funnily enough, I did things like I'd went wrestling with her a couple of times like, to watch, and she is like hot. She's like Monday Night, like Raw, like she watched like
on tour,
and there's wrestling like SmackDown. Like she's like, the hotel room is just, she's in.
Does she get into like the Ring of Honor stuff and like all the alternative
everything, NXT, like, all that stuff. And so I did like a surprise birthday thing for her where we got this like wrestling ring. So I had little experiences with it, but I didn't at all feel, I didn't really, sort of got it, didn't really. But we were taught by Chavo Guerrero, and we are trained by Chavo Guerrero.
He's a legend.
Yeah, he is. And what the original Globus.
I'm doing my research for this.
Yeah.
I watched an interview you did with Lorraine Kelly, and I think you mentioned Chavo Guerrero.
Oh, yeah.
And I just laughed, and I was like, she has no idea who that is.
Well, I know Chavo. I've got the protection of the Guerrero family, actually.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow. does that mean if anybody fucks with you, like, you're like straight on the phone to the
Guerreros? Yeah, I'm like, Chavo! Yeah. Someone's mazing me!
Chavo, bud! I'm in Camden, yeah?
Uncle Chavo! Coach! Hey, coach! he's absolutely amazing. And the original Glow Girls, because Glow was a real show, if anyone doesn't know, it existed in the 80s, was like first female wrestlers on TV, kind of became a kids show. And it was a Guerrero that taught, you know, it's from
the Guerreros.
The Guerreros have taught the Glow Girls, which is so cool. And anyway, he has taught us about wrestling culture. Kia Stevens also on the show. Awesome Kong, you may know her as. If they're wrestling fans, and she plays she's one of the actresses on the show as well. So we have been very schooled in wrestling culture, and
so you know what it's all about.
Yeah,
you know what,
and
you
we
can.
Really respect it,
because somebody will be listening to this and they'll be like, right, they'll come on, listen to this because they're a fan of your music or whatever. Right? They'll be like, oh, wrestling's all fake, it's all bullshit. Yeah. Right? Like it's all scripted up, but there's no fake way to take a bump.
Oh, absolutely.
If you're getting picked up by somebody and thrown down,
you're
on
being
your back,
thrown down.
You're
yeah.
getting thrown down on your yeah. back, and the wrestling ring is never as soft yeah. as you think it is.
No, it's not
like a trampoline or
no,
something.
No, it's definitely not. It's an amazing thing, because I get, you know, where that comes from, that it's fake or whatever, but it's not understanding what wrestling is.
Yeah,
because it's not supposed to be it's not a boxing.
It's
you're not
UFC,
going to watch.
Like,
you're not going to watch
pageant.
People hurt each other. Hopefully. But it's a comic book kind of.
It's
storytelling, yeah. And they're incredible athletes, and the stunts that they do are out. Like, they're amazing. It's fun and it's dangerous.
It's very, very, very dangerous, yeah.
Well, I'm a bit hypermobile. I'm really hypermobile, so I'm like double jointed, like massively.
Shut up. Is there anything you can.
Well, just like my arms are all like weirdly bendy, and I can walk on my feet like that. And
oh, so you'd be like a perfect ballet dancer?
Yes, I can actually do the hardest that some, like Alessandra Ferri, I just worked with her. She's a prima ballerina from Italy.
What's that film, Black Swan, where you get up on top of
the place? Yeah, and she like, she said my point was really good, and she's like a prima ballerina. And that's just double jointed, because there's stuff in ballet that you can't do unless you've trained for years to do.
Wait, like how do you become double jointed? Is that like genetics? Or
I was
like,
just born like
do you reckon that like you're like... Like mum was walking past like a nuclear reactor or something like one day, and it just got like a tiny little bit, and then it was just
you
like,
go past like a really big magnet and just turn
exactly.
the wrong way too far. Yeah.
But like, yeah, like the Glow season 2 stuff is coming out.
Season 2 is out.
Oh, is it? Sorry, I haven't seen. All right, okay.
And season 3 we're going to start shooting at the end of the year, hopefully. We don't know
so
the date.
So it keeps getting recommissioned.
Yeah, confirmed season 3 and we just our stunt coordinator was the first female to win an Emmy for a comedy series and
wow.
Our production designer just won an Emmy and the Emmys of like the acting side of thing happening, I think, next weekend. Yeah, not this weekend, next. And we're up for 10 Emmys, so...
Are you going to go over?
I mean, I'm actually working on a film right now. I can't say right now, but I am working on a British film that I'm really excited about.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, yeah.
What's the ambition? Like, do you have an ambition in acting? Like, is there something that you, like, really want to do? A show you want to work on? Like a film franchise that you'd like to be?
Yeah,
James Bond, I don't know.
I'll be the new James Bond. Why not? Janet Bond. Janet's not a good name for Bond.
The name's Bond. No.
Janet Bond. I really want to do a good quality horror film. I want to do a really good horror that's scary. And I also want to do a crazy like action like where I'm like, killing, like, I don't know, stuff and doing crazy stunts. Like, I want to be in the action and I want to do a horror that's really scary and kind of like, I love horror and I love action as well. So I'd love to do something in both those fields.
I think that those are two achievable boxes for you to tick
off. Reckon?
Yeah, I reckon.
Right now I've got my wrestling behind me. I'm like, I do my own stunts, man.
Yeah, that'll work for the thriller one, but like, I don't know, like
you're scary.
Now you've done the wrestling one, like you're not going to be able to play the victim in the horror one unless you play like the killer.
You don't know I'm the killer until the very end.
I always like to get a piece of advice off the people that we get in to give to the to like maybe your younger self or to artists who are starting out at the moment, because like I'm writing a book at the moment about the music industry for young kids and for independent artists, where I've like interviewed loads of people.
Wow.
And it's like I'm trying to put all the information there for them to use whatever way they want. It's not how to get to number one.
Yeah.
It's here's loads of useful shit that you might not know.
Yeah.
But I always just like to find out what sort of impending wisdom that you might have to somebody who's starting out.
I'm going to quote Dory for this one. Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming.
I think that's perfect. It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Like, I know with a lot of people that I'm friendly with, basically 90% of my friends are musicians, like, back home.
Yeah.
And with some people, it's a disease.
Yeah.
Like, even if they don't want to do it, they have to. Yeah. They have to create, they have to put stuff out.
Yeah.
Which is the concept of always keep swimming.
Yeah.
And something will happen.
Yeah. Just don't give up on yourself. You know, it's a hard thing to do. It's hard industry, creative industries, sort of any outside of the traditional box, carving out your own career becomes confusing, and I think you're going to have many moments of doubting yourself. You're going to have many ups, hopefully, and many downs, definitely, and just keep swimming. Like, that's all I can say, really.
And if you can't swim,
surf.
Kia, thank you so much for taking the time to shoot the breeze.
Thanks for having me. Really fun.
Thanks for laying your demo bare as well.
It was really fun listening to it.
First time you've heard it in like 10
really
years.
Jammy. I'm gonna get back on that vibe.
Wicked. Okay, well,
thank you.
Okay, so while you were listening to that, I went down and put the dinner on, and traditional sausages, mashed potato, vegetables. Stick that in your plate and eat it. Much love to you all. Thank you so much for your time on the Slacker podcast. If you've enjoyed it, then please do me a favor and get a graffiti can out and take it all across the world, tagging Slacker podcast wherever it is you go. And whatever way you want to spread the word. Maybe don't do that one because I might get in trouble. But yeah, whatever legal way you can spread the word of the Slacker podcast, that would be amazing. Thank you very much to Kate Nash for being an absolute gem of a human being. And, you know, interviewing someone like her is always way easier when they're just so easy to talk to. I mean, like, it could have been so much longer. Next week on the Slacker podcast, we have a native of Fort Worth in Texas. He is the modern soul man, Leon Bridges, and yeah, another fascinating person to have on the podcast. If you haven't, please leave us a little review on the Apple Podcast app or wherever it is you get your apps out of. And that way it creeps up the charts and gets more eyes and ears on this podcast. Slack on, my slackers. Slack on. Thank you so much to Jenny, Adam, Chris, and Kate's manager, Joey, for the help on this podcast. Lots of love to them. And of course, lots of love to you.